Prime time is anytime. Subscribe to the Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Look up. Look way up. He sits alone atop the standings. Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports. Now on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
The station. Black roof country.
It's hour number three of this radio program for Wednesday, February the 18th, 2015. Bob McCown, Ken Reed in our Toronto studios. It's prime time. A little bit later, Charles Grantham will join us. He's the former executive director of the National Basketball Players Association. LeBron James, elected the vice president of the NBPA, joins Chris Paul as the leaders of the union. How is that going to play out? It's going to be real interesting as we get to, arguably the most interesting potential negotiation in collective bargaining history in professional sport. But there have been some really interesting ones in the past. Maybe this one will just be, there'll be no threats, no nothing. They'll just solve it. Who knows?
Somebody will opt out and it'll all go to.
I'm guessing this thing is going to be Armageddon, but we'll ask Charles about that.
I hope not, but I'm guessing it will be.
Meanwhile, our first guest joins us from the Conn Smythe Celebrity Sports Dinner, one of the truly great events, annual events for many, 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 many years in Toronto. Greg Zahn is with us. Hi, Zahni.
Hello.
This is not your first rodeo, as they say. You've been to this thing before, I assume?
Negative. This is the first Conn Smythe Dinner
really?
That I've been invited to, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here.
It's you'll enjoy it. It's a great event, and have fun. What are you wearing, by the way?
I have a extremely pink tuxedo jacket on, lime or sage green shirt, black tuxedo pants, and a matching ascot.
Outstanding.
Matching which, the green or the pink?
It's both, actually. I've got the green really? Has some. The ascot has both green and pink, and it's a darker green, so it picks up the black. But it's animal manalism at its best with the ascot.
That's the manalist. Zahni, yep. I'm just wondering, when you wear something like that, are you required by law to walk around the whole night with just two thumbs straight up in the air as you walk by everything and everyone?
Not required, encouraged, but
yes.
Not required, yeah. No, I got the idea about the ascot. I saw it on television the other day, and I was like, we're bringing that back. And then as I did more research on the ascot, mm-hmm. apparently it's an extremely acceptable mode of neckwear for daytime formal events.
Okay.
So I got here when it was still light out, so I qualified.
I think the only problem you may run into with the ascot tonight is if you see someone else with an ascot, you're required to challenge him to a duel. So it could get nasty down there at the Conn Smythe dinner.
There will be a throwdown. I will out-ascot anybody in the room. I can promise you that.
Well, you've been called that previously, so I'm sure it won't be anything new to you.
Not at all.
Well, let's get into some baseball chatter as we quickly approach the arrival of spring training. Players are arriving as we speak, getting their work in, but, you know, some are, some aren't. What's your level of excitement's the wrong word, but I think you know what I mean. The prospects for this Blue Jays team.
I'm actually excited, to be honest with you. It's one of those things where, you know, everybody in their and their mother would have loved to have seen the Jays go out and get pitching, but they did the next best thing. They went out and they got a really, you know, top level catcher, a guy with a great reputation behind the plate in the clubhouse. I'm estimating he's going to account for the Jays pitching staff being a half a run better per game over 162, which is tremendous.
That's what I thought.
Yep. I really think that short of finding that pitching. you go out there and you get a catcher. And not to say that Navarro didn't do a good job last year. He's just not quite the game caller that Martin is, and he's definitely not the presence in the clubhouse. And so you look at the value that Alex got for the money he spent on Russell Martin. He paid for one player, and he made about 13 or 14 other guys better, which is pretty tremendous. That's serious bang for your buck. And so I look at the addition of the new third baseman. I mean, I'm excited to see that guy hit in the Rogers Center for 81 games. I was a real big fan of him watching him play for the Oakland Athletics. I mean, he and Kyle Seager, in my opinion, the absolute class of the American League at the third base position. And now he's playing for the Blue Jays, which is really exciting. He's a good defender, and he's got serious pop. And from what I understand, he's a grinder. They needed a few more dirtbags in that clubhouse, a few more guys that are going to hold their teammates accountable and expect people to play the game the proper way and play it hard for, you know, 6 months straight. So that being said, I like this team going into spring training. Are they going to be able to stand pat? Probably not. I don't think they have the depth that you would like to see from a team that was expecting to win. But that, there's no reason why we can't pick that up along the way. I think, you know, as certain things become available, I think you pick it up. And I think it's the onus is on the 25-man roster to keep this ball club within striking distance so that when the trade deadline rolls around, if they need to go out and get that bona fide ace, the powers that be at Rogers feel like there's a reason to do it. And I think they still need that number one. There's no doubt about it. That's the biggest hole in the organization, is the lack of a guy like Felix Hernandez, Verlander, Max Scherzer. Unfortunately, those guys cost a lot of money, or they take some time to develop, and they just weren't willing to do 7 years, you know, at $30 million a year for Max Scherzer. And honestly, it's hard to say whether or not they have a candidate to be developed into that bona fide number one. So it'll sort itself out, but I'm excited about this club.
Let me ask you a question that I honestly don't know the answer to, but I'm going to make an observation from the outside looking in. There's nobody in baseball like Brett Laurie. Nobody has that level of that almost hockey mentality, that he's a different kind of guy. Do you think, as good as Donaldson is, and he's plenty good, you've already documented that, and I agree with you. The guy is, what he could do in the Rogers Center is not quite limitless, but he could have a big, big year and a big, big career with the Toronto Blue Jays. Was there a subtraction to create an addition with Brett Laurie, in your opinion? Was he, for lack of a better term, problematic in that room, do you think?
That's the rumor. I don't know. I didn't spend a whole lot of time in that room. But what I will say about my approach and my opinion is, you always trade potential for reality. Donaldson's reality right now. This is a guy who's performed. This is a guy who's doing the kind of things on the field that they expected Brett Laurie to do. There's no denying that Brett Laurie's a dynamic athlete. He's got athleticism. But to say that there's nobody else in the game like him, that's hard to say, because we don't get a chance to watch the young kids of other organizations on a daily basis. Yeah, he can dunk a basketball. He's built like a brick outhouse. But and he can run fast, and he can hit it a long ways. But the point is that for a guy who's as talented as he is, he wasn't making any progress. He wasn't getting any better. And his attitude towards the game and his, go, 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 have me 4 Red Bulls before every game and just, put the pedal to the metal and no finesse whatsoever, it was holding him back.
It was wearing on his teammates, too.
Well, there's no doubt about that. I mean, it's going to – Well, and you know what? And they made their own bed with that situation.
Sure.
Because when you have a kid, I don't care who he is, yeah, you need all 25 guys to help you win. But at the same time, young kids come into the clubhouse. They need to be made to respect the game, the clubhouse atmosphere, their elders. And when you allow a kid like Brett Laurie to dictate what's being played on the radio in years one or two, you're creating a monster. You cannot allow these kids to go running amok. You allow them to be themselves personality-wise to some degree, but at the end of the day, if their personality becomes a distraction or a detriment to the ball club itself, nip it in the bud. And the guys who are at fault here for creating that situation are the veteran players in that clubhouse. It would have never in a million years happened on my watch, or if Matt Stairs was in the clubhouse, or a Troy Gloss, or a Scotty Rowland. That kind of thing would have never been it. We would have had that kid under our thumb, and he would have made a heck of a lot more progress, a heck of a lot faster, with the guidance and the tutelage of some firm and respectable veteran players. I mean, the game's changing to the point now where, you know, guys just go and they show up and they do their job and they go home. They're not going to give you any more than they have to. And the guys that do are special.
So, aren't these things that – these are the things that you can't measure with numbers. Like you mentioned Donaldson coming in, a dirtbag. This team, they need guys. And I think a lot of fans have been yelling for it for a couple of years to get the clubhouse in order. And these are things that I'm sure a lot of people are going to roll their eyes over and say, well, who cares, as long as you produce on the field. But give me your take on just how important that is and who back in your day really – maybe even, I don't know, if you were a young guy and you needed to be set into place, if anyone stepped up and did that.
Oh my goodness! I can tell you a prime example. It happened to me myself. You know, I grew up around the game. My uncle Rick played 24 years in the big leagues.
Yep.
He was a Baltimore Oriole. I grew up with the Orioles. Cal Ripken Jr.'s first roommate in the big leagues was my uncle. I used to go to lunch with the guy every time they came to Anaheim. I'd be in the car with Cal Jr. He gave me a glove. So when it came time to become a Baltimore Oriole. You know, I went to instructional league with Brady Anderson and Ben McDonald and Chris Hoyles. I was exposed to all these veteran guys who were veterans, but I was exposed to them when they were on their way into the big leagues. So when I got to the show, I took liberties with these guys. And you know what? As much as they liked me, as much as they wanted me to be successful, they nipped it right in the bud, and they clipped my wings from day one. I'll never forget it. I was out at the stretch circle. I played catch with Chris Hoyles every single day, and I lobbed the ball to him. And he was paying attention, but he pretended like he wasn't. He headbutted the ball, and all of a sudden, I had what was called the posse all over me. Cal Ripken, Ben McDonald, Brady Anderson, Chris Hoyles, all of the above. They beat me on my rib cage, physically abused me on my way to the training table. They taped me spread eagle to the training table. They wrote rookie on my forehead with pink methylate, and they shoved a bucket of ice down my shorts. I missed the entire batting practice. And you know what? Phil Regan, the manager of the Baltimore Orioles, he did not care because he knew that what those guys were doing was educating me. I had taken liberties with some of the veteran players. I had become a little bit too mouthy, and I'm sure this comes as a shock to you guys. I was a little bit chatty, a little bit talkative.
Really?
as a young player, yeah.
Hard to understand.
But I learned how to stifle myself. I learned how to show these veteran players some respect and give them their room, and all the while close my mouth and be the guy who listened. I mean, if I had a dollar for every time Cal worked me over physically, I'd be a pretty wealthy guy. He still owes me a suit. He told me flat out. He said, you are never to come past this point into the back of the plane under no circumstances. So I'm in my first suit that I paid for myself as a major league player, feeling real frisky, and Cal says, I need you to come here. And all of a sudden, I crossed over that imaginary barrier line. He tackled me, wrestled me to the ground. They had just got done eating a bunch of blue crabs in the back of the plane, so there was nothing but mud and Old Bay seasoning everywhere. He throws me to the ground, and he tears my suit off of me, and I'm like, what are you doing? He goes, remember when I said, under no circumstances do you come back here? I'm like, well, you just told me to. He goes, I said under no circumstances, and that includes when I ask you to come back here. So these kind of things don't happen anymore, but they need to happen more often, and they need to happen with the backing of the management all the way up to the front office down to the field manager. You have to allow your veteran players to create the atmosphere that they want in the clubhouse, because at the end of the day, when guys get along and they know their pecking order and they know the hierarchy, everything seems to work out just fine.
Here's the interesting question, though. I mean, I'm with you 100%. I'm that guy. But you have a bunch of veterans on this club that have been here a while, and the clubhouse allegedly has been, at some level, problematic. Now a Donaldson comes in who's still reasonably young but very talented and very committed. And Martin comes in who has this reputation as being the guy. Follow me. I'll lead you. Don't give me any guff. Is that going to be potentially problematic with the other veterans that are there?
No, I think one of the greatest things that the Jays have going for them is that Russell Martin and Jose Bautista were junior college teammates. That's a good thing.
Right. But
at the end of the day, and it's not a knock on veteran players. I mean, I knew veteran players who were great players on the field that were great teammates, but they just didn't have it in their personality to step up in a room of guys and be vocal. They were okay to take somebody aside and give them the gears or whatever, but they didn't like to do it in front of people. It takes a special kind of guy. And I always have thought to myself, you know, these $20, $30 million a year contracts should be reserved for the kind of guys that are not only great on the field, but are willing to step up in the room and be more than just a player on the field. To be that mentor in the clubhouse, to be that example that the younger guys look to. And there are different types of leaders. There are silent leaders, there are vocal leaders, there are guys that lead by example, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I don't spend a lot of time in that clubhouse. It's my estimation that I think Jose Bautista is a guy who wants to lead. I've heard stories that there's been a lack of support in certain areas for him being a policeman. Maybe it's not his personality. Maybe it should be. Russell Martin is going to be that guy. You just, as a veteran player, once you've paid your dues and you have the name and the numbers and, you know, the contract, the bottom line is how do you want the game played by your teammates? How do you want the organization to be viewed by your peers in other organizations? Do you want to be thought of as a bunch of, you know, pretty prima donnas that don't play the game hard, that don't break up double plays, that don't protect their teammates, that don't, you know, grind out at bats, that can't throw strikes? All these things are you know, how do you want to be perceived by other players around the league? And that's important. You know, if I'm a veteran player, I want to put my stamp on the organization. I want guys on the other teams to look to the team that I'm playing for and say, yeah, I can tell Greg Zahn played for this ball club. I could tell that the way that these guys are hustling, the way that these guys are playing the game hard, is a byproduct of his influence and his presence in that clubhouse. The things that he does on the field, the things that he says to his younger teammates, the way he carries himself in the clubhouse, he sets the tone. And that's what guys like Russell Martin and Bautista, even Edwin, maybe not so much with the English-speaking players, but that's what you expect from your big-money guys. You expect more than just numbers on the field. You expect the whole package.
Now, Zahni, I'm buying what you're saying. I think Bob's buying what you're saying, but I'm sure there are numbers people out there that are saying, whatever, chemistry, whatever. I'm going to measure this in numbers. What's your argument to them?
Pardon me, say that again?
What's your argument to the people that say chemistry isn't that important in a room and the numbers speak for themselves? What would you say to them?
It depends. I'll say this really shortly. I know we didn't have the greatest chemistry in the world early in the 1997 season. We had an extremely talented group of players in Florida, and it wasn't until Darren Dalton and Craig Counsell came to the ball club at the trade deadline that we developed that chemistry. Once we developed that chemistry and we had the talented players, there was no stopping us. You can win either way. You can either out-talent guys, or you can be a very talented, close-knit group of guys who has each other's backs. And, you know, you can do it that way. I mean, I think it's important, especially when you're not the most talented group of players in the league. You have to have good chemistry, and you have to have a very functional clubhouse. If you have dysfunction in a clubhouse and you don't have the talent, especially in certain positions like your number one starter, you're going to come up short every time.
With Greg Zahn, who's at the Conn Smythe Sports Celebrity Dinner, looking at the numbers in Las Vegas, the over-unders for victories this season. Vegas and the bettors have established the Boston Red Sox as being the favorites in the American League East, with the Blue Jays a reasonably close second, tied with the Baltimore Orioles. Would you dispute that based upon what you've seen, what you know? Are you comfortable that the Red Sox have made enough improvement to go from the outhouse to the penthouse?
I would. I definitely would. And I wouldn't dispute that the Toronto Blue Jays slot in right behind them. But they have to make certain assumptions. You have to make certain assumptions about the Blue Jays' big boys staying healthy. They're not in a position right now where they can sustain a major injury to one of their main guys in the lineup. And if it happens, they're going to be in trouble. If they stay healthy, they got a chance.
I hear you got to go, so we'll let you adios, and we'll talk to you soon.
I hope so. Talk to you soon, guys.
Greg Zahn of Sportsnet. He's at the Conn Smythe Sports Celebrity Dinner
in a pink suit, outstanding, and an ascot.
I can't remember all the. Oh yeah, the ascot.
I wonder what Cal Ripken would do if he saw Zahnie in a pink suit and an ascot tonight, walking onto the old Baltimore bus.
Hopefully he'd rip it off him.
Hopefully he'd clap. I'd slow applause. One man clapping.
Well, I have a few outrageous things in my collection. I know you have one.
Mm-hmm. I would like more.
Would you?
Oh, yeah. I Deb Berman, who does our clothes, I tell her all the time, please, Deb, please. And she says, no. And she'll say, I let you go this far. And then last time she said, go ahead. Thank you, Deb. Thank you.
Well, she has nothing to do with my clothing purchases.
Yeah. Then she said, please, just don't wear this and this with it. If you go over the top. And I said, I don't know. Like you said earlier, Bob, I am an idiot.
I'm a man who has some level of confidence in this Blue Jay team, as Zahnie does. I like what they've done. Mm-hmm. I understand the trepidation of fans. I understand that you have two or three young pitchers in the starting rotation, and you just don't know what you're going to get.
Right.
I understand you have two old guys at the front end of the rotation, but neither one throws hard. Neither one has had injury problems. I don't think either one has missed a start, have they?
Those are the two guys. Those two guys, Burley and Dickey, are the least of my worries.
Well, you know, you anticipate you're going to get 400 innings out of the two of them. You know, they won't be world beaters, but they'll chew up innings and they'll keep you in games. I get that, and I understand you have a bullpen that you have no clue what they're going to be.
None.
Which of course I've said many times. Is of no consequence to me whatsoever. I've seen too many baseball games and too many teams where bullpens happened, just were created. Out of nothing comes something. Out of something just as often comes nothing. So that they didn't make or haven't made any real significant moves in the bullpen is of no concern to me, which isn't to say I think they're going to be fine. It wouldn't matter one way or the other. But I love these, specifically these two moves at third base and behind the plate.
Yeah.
In terms of character, in terms of leadership, and obviously in terms of production. I've said, as Zahnie did, I think Russell Martin makes this pitching staff a half a run a game better. And that means wins. Not 10 more wins, but 3, 4, 5, 6.
Well, I think Zahnie said it best, is everyone stays healthy. Because...
Well, that's always the issue.
That's always the issue, but there's not a lot. I like the fact that Navarro's still around. So if something does go wrong with Russell Martin, Navarro's there. But in the outfield, I mean, the potential of Dalton Pompey is outstanding. But he's your starting center fielder right now. That's a bit of a gamble. And after Pompey, you know?
Well, he's going to be around, and he's probably going to get some PT.
Right. He'll get some time. So it's just, I know staying healthy, it's the cliche, but it's so important to this team. But you know what? You look at the Red Sox, their infield looks pretty awesome. But then at catcher, Christian Vasquez, So there's some weak spots on every team in the AL East, and I think that's what's working in favor of the Jays. Second base scares me for Toronto, too.
Second base, again, is of no consequence to me because I know we got at least one guy who can play lights-out defense, and that's all I care about at second base.
Okay.
And that's Goins.
Okay.
I don't know about Asturias. Asturias was hurt all last year. I think Asturias is just, he's another guy. I don't think he's a starter.
Well, if you're going to go with Goins at second base, please teach him how to bunt.
Well, but
you got,
you got Travis, too. And you know, those that have seen him think he has the tools, offensively and defensively, to play the position.
But never played against above double A. So you're gambling again.
I get it. You don't know. But, and I've never seen him play.
Nope.
I'm not going to make a, this is not a personal assessment. I'm going by scouts and people. They rated him pretty highly. They thought he had a real chance. We're going to find out. You got three choices at second base. I don't care if you, I don't care if whoever, if the second base position, if collectively they hit 200.
200, you're happy?
I'm not happy.
Give me 230, give me 240.
Well, I love that. I'm all right with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look at 1 through 6, maybe 7 in the lineup, that's really strong. 1 through 6, I'd put them up against anybody.
But we saw that last year, though. It was so strong at the top, and then you'd get to the bottom, and you're just, got to eke through this.
But it's hard for me to think that Dalton Pompey will have as poor an offensive year, albeit as a rookie, as Colby Rasmus had last year.
He's not going to strike out as many times as Colby.
I think he's going to hit better overall, and he won't strike out as much.
Yeah.
And I think he's a young guy. He'll learn. He's got some speed. He's got more speed than Colby Rasmus. Colby Rasmus actually had pretty good speed, but used it.
I thought Colby was fine defensively. But yeah, Pompey's, he's kind of an explosive player. And Dalton, I know you're from Mississauga. Personal plea here. Go with a good country song to walk up, because I'm really going to miss Colby's song, as you know, Bob. But yeah, I mean, I liked Colby. I was one of the guys who liked Colby. But you know what? By the end of the season, I pretty much knew what we were getting from him, and it wasn't doing the job.
But I mean, the only issue for me in terms of improvement in the second base, we don't know. Let's put second base aside. Okay. It can't be any worse than it was last year. I don't think it will be.
Left field, you're not going to get a guy who had as many hits as as our boy Cabrera. That's not going to happen. Yeah,
that Melky guy.
How
quickly they forget, right?
It took me 6 seconds.
We'll talk more about the Blue Jays, obviously. When we come back, LeBron James elected the vice president of the National Basketball Players Association. Chris Paul is the other guy in that group. There's been suggestion that the two of them might not see eye to eye, although I'm not exactly sure why. How important is that as we approach a very serious negotiation? As you know, the NBA has a new television deal that hasn't kicked in yet. But it's got a lot of money in it. Cap's going to go up. Some have said it could go up to $95 million, maybe $100 million. We have a new commissioner on the other side of the table. Is he going to be as hard-ass as David Stern was?
Mm-hmm.
All very interesting questions. We got a little time to dissect this, but the pieces are starting to fall into place. We'll talk to Charles Grantham, who knows a lot about this kind of stuff. He's the former executive director of the Players Association. He's next on Primetime.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Ziggy played guitar, jamming good with Webb and Gilly, and the spiders from Mars, they played in
the control room is grooving in there.
They are.
24 before the hour. Primetime continues on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks. McCowan Reed in our Toronto studios.
Personally, I would have went with Armageddon It by Def Leppard coming into this segment.
Thank you so much for that reference. No idea what you're talking about.
Armageddon.
I've heard of Def Leppard.
Yeah, but the Armageddon thing. What with the whole NBA talk?
Oh, well, it's a little premature for that, don't you think?
Obviously.
We have time. It is interesting, though, that we are addressing this subject when we still have oodles of time to figure out how they're going to divide up all this newfound cash.
But when we're talking about stuff like that, is it really oodles? What are we talking about?
Well, why don't we talk to the guy who would know?
Yeah, exactly.
Here's the former executive director of the National Basketball Players Association. Here's our friend Charles Grantham. Hello, Charles. How you been?
How are you guys?
We're excellent.
Great, thank you.
So is it? Are we being premature here in looking ahead and saying, There's a big deal coming, and looks like people are taking sides, and you got a new commissioner. Now you got LeBron as the vice president of the PA. Is there going to be hell to pay?
Well, you know, it does. The mix of forces does sort of dictate it's going to be a pretty adamant discussion. But I don't see, quite frankly, it's a matter of you trying to decide now what are you doing with excess money, because essentially when you projected this revenue coming in, no one would have expected that the TV deal would multiply at the time that it did.
Sure.
And if you know, if you notice, typically the collective bargaining agreement and expiration and the television deals don't necessarily coincide, and they could typically do that for a reason. After all that's said and done, however, the players have to decide what they do with excess monies. And it's the easiest way is simply to allow that influx of new cash increase the salary cap. And that's essentially the mechanism that the collective bargaining agreement has initiated. So that's easy. The question comes back, however, is that the NBA, because they would like to see the growth slowed, they don't want to see teams having salary caps as high as $90 million so quickly, because that would probably mean there'd be some radical change taking place within the league, because some of the better teams will obviously look to change their personnel, and will have plenty of money to get that done. So now, the same thing occurred to us back in the 90s when we had a collective bargaining agreement that expired, and we had TV money that came about. And I simply said, look, as it's projected, the way we projected the next 3 years in income, let's let that ride. And anything extra, let me figure out a formula to distribute it to the players so everybody gets a piece of this action, as opposed to allowing it to just multiply, and then only the best players would get the most of those funds. So it becomes a philosophical decision that the union has to make. We're talking about a possible opt-out of their contract and negotiation. So all the potential things that could happen in a negotiation are then up for grabs. Typically, you know, the unions have decertified, looking to get access to the antitrust exemption or an antitrust law by the players. Management holds on to their antitrust exemption, and ultimately there's a lockout. Typically the contract ends in July. That's not a time to strike, and quite frankly, most people are not concerned about basketball in July. So there's potential some things there that may happen, yes. And but we also have to sit back, as you guys would know, and recognize that over the last probably 20 years, been enormous concessions that the players have made, starting with 2011, giving back 7 percentage points of your revenue share, which at $50 million a point is $350 million a year over 10 years. It's $3.5 billion going from one side to the other. So there are some issues that may provide a confrontation, because at the last particular negotiation, management cried poor and said they didn't have, people weren't making the kind of money that they had planned. So there's potential for that. But we also know that the salary cap as a foundation, things like that cannot probably be negotiated away. That would take action if, in fact, that's something that
right.
the players have in mind.
You've mentioned some of the factors here, but here's what is, I've seen over 40 years of broadcasting a whole bunch of these in all sports, so I'm not a rookie to this. But here's what I would say is different from my perspective, and you've touched on a bunch of them. Number one, the give back, going from 57% to 50%, essentially, right. Under the notion that the teams aren't making money.
Right.
In the interim, the Los Angeles Clippers are sold for $2 billion. The Atlanta Hawks are likely to be sold for around $700 to $800 million. The
right.
value of these franchises is not going down.
Right.
And there's a new sheriff in town. David Stern isn't there anymore. You have a new commissioner, and we have no idea what his inclination is, We know how David operated.
Well, we do know what his inclination is, because every commissioner is in the business to maintain the value of the franchise. Well,
that much I get. But you would know as well as anybody that David Stern was pretty hard line, at least in a public stance.
Right.
I mean, I can remember one of the negotiations, and I apologize, I can't remember which one, where David came on this very program and told me we have, I don't know what it was, $5.1 billion to spend. I'm prepared to sign a check over to the Players Association and let them decide how to spend it. You can give it all to Michael Jordan, some of it to Michael Jordan, none of it. You'll remember all that dialogue that took place. I don't know whether this new guy is that same kind of guy.
Well, I think Adam was tutored by Mr. Stern. I can recall Adam was
a
young associate coming in, and quite frankly, they may have changed places, but the philosophy of the 30-odd owners has not changed. They recognize, and matter of fact, some of those owners had come in and paid a pretty hefty price for those franchises and aren't expecting a substantial return on investment. Therefore, with a $2 billion increase in value and the Atlanta Hawks now going up next, I would suspect that none of the vehicles that were utilized to create that kind of value will be dismantled.
Okay,
and
meaning?
That is, whether it's Adam Silver, David Stern, John Jones, whoever that may be, that is not going to happen.
But invariably,
and quite frankly, they have no. The players have limited leverage, and you know, in all honesty, I mean, I teach a class in this very subject, and I was talking about the 2011 negotiations. Now, at the bargaining table, everybody cries poor.
Of course.
So, if you happen to believe that, then and accept it, then essentially you lose out, and that's basically what happened in 2011. I never felt comfortable that the players actually had the people in-house to do the kind of forensic accounting it takes to get to the bottom of those things. And, you know, typically what happens is teams send in financial reports, not audited statements, financial reports. And at the end of the day, you are then asked to believe those financial reports. And I'm saying you have to take that. You got to take two and three layers off of that and get to the core of the issues. And I don't believe that happens. So I don't think when the owners say they're not making money, there are two things that happen here. If you're losing money and cannot afford to pay the salaries and benefits of the players, then I am legally entitled to inspect every penny that you've got coming in revenue. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
If you come in and state that, well, I can still pay my obligations, but I'm not making as much as I want, then I don't have access to those particular numbers.
So, Charles, right now the big date, it's December 15, 2016. Either side can opt out by that date. So let's say I'm Mr. Average NBA player, and I'm making, you know, not millions of dollars. Is it in my best interest to have superstars like LeBron James and Chris Paul so heavily involved in the Players Association right now?
Well, it's always best to have your stars involved. You got to get them plugged in. If I give you a little history for a moment, in 62 when the union was formed, it was formed at the All-Star game with all the All-Star players as representatives of their teams. And out of that came a pension. So it's definitely a benefit to have your best players involved. The problem that you run into, and I think you run into as we look forward here, I don't think the owners particularly opt out. They got a great deal. The players may want to opt out, but I think you have to be very careful what you ask for at that point, because you don't have much to give. You have made so many concessions over these 20 years, there's not very much to give at this point. It may very well be that you fight another day and build some leverage at some point. I don't know that they'll have that by 2016. So you're going to see a lot of this disagreement, et cetera. But it's all going to hit the fan by the time you get to the opt-out. I doubt the owners will opt out, but it looks like the players are moving in the direction of wishing to opt out.
You don't suspect then that two star players who are going to clearly be active, we presume, in the association over the next couple of years leading to the deadline are going to be motivated in their own interests rather than in the interests of the association itself or the union
well,
itself?
Well, they could be, but remember this, they have one vote.
Sure. But again, depending on their activity in the negotiation, and I understand that will be limited to some extent, yeah, they can forge public opinion. One thing we know about professional athletes is there's a whole lot of them that are going to go home and put their feet up and, yeah, you call me and tell me how to vote.
Right.
I mean, they're not active in the process. It's hard for me to understand, but it's the same in all sports, baseball, basketball, football, hockey.
Well, they don't participate.
Sure it is. It's a very limited number that are active, and they'll listen to whoever gives them the message, you know, whether it's the head of their association or whether it's LeBron James or Chris Paul.
That's correct. That's correct. However, there's a thing called preparation. And if they're not prepared, if players aren't prepared to lose an entire season, they will never prevail at the bargaining table.
My question is, how can players who, let's say LeBron's worth $270 to $300 million, how can he relate to that guy who's just making the league minimum and can't afford to lose a season?
Here's where the cap presents certain problems, and it's probably more apparent in football than it is in basketball. In other words, the harder the cap, the more difficult it is for you to allocate the resources in a fair and equitable way, because whenever one player is better off, another player is worse off. So when you have a salary cap that was in basketball, which was what we call a soft cap, and had many exceptions to it, then the more money the star players made, the more money everyone else made. Now, once you start, you know, it's sort of like a mini economy in a whole one of these sports. Once you start manipulating with the system, trying to give more money to the middle class player, then ultimately, the more restrictions you have, the more difficult that is to happen. So football, with the hardest cap, has the most problem. Basketball, once you went to the rookie wage scale and you went to the escrow system and all these other restrictive things, once you went there, then you have a similar problem, that it's hard to have a resource allocation system that is fair and equitable for all.
Yeah.
That's why everyone is opposed to a salary cap. And baseball probably, as you see, is better for the players.
Well, peace for 20 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You know, argue
again,
all you
it's
want.
What the owners want. It's what they want for themselves. And
right.
What if you recall, in baseball, the biggest issue there was that they had a fellow named Mr. Steinbrenner, who did not want a salary cap because he was in New York.
Yeah, he wanted to outspend everybody and win.
And wanted to be able to spend the most money.
Yeah. We got to get out of here. We're dead out of time. It's always a joy talking to you. Thank you so much,
hey,
Charles, for your
my
time.
My pleasure, guys.
We'll
Thank
talk
you.
Again soon. Charles Grantham, the former executive director of the National Basketball Players Association. Really smart guy. And,
yeah.
You know, it's real interesting, too. You know, you get into these negotiations, and the guys who ultimately win are those guys in the middle.
Yeah.
Because that's where the general managers can't help themselves. If you give them the freedom, you know, you restrict them at the top end. You can only spend this much.
Yes.
And at the bottom end, you got to spend this much. In the middle, knock yourself out.
Well, that's why we have third liners in the NHL making $3.5-4 million.
Or $5 million.
Yeah. Depending on what you classify a third liner, correct.
Could be a fourth liner. Could be a fifth liner. It's the same in all sports. It's the middle class that is way overpaid. Nobody goes to see them play. They're just guys. They're good players, but it's the stars that make your game. I say, give the stars a gazillion dollars.
I think we need a cap here so that the middle class like myself can get paid more while a superstar like you is topped off.
See, and I'm the opposite. I think, oh, never mind. It doesn't matter what I think. Good night from Toronto.